You know, Joe Silvatsky, that man is my brother. Last night he's come to my shandy. John, I'm a telephone to Marjan. Evening, dark is night. That's a miner's all big and small gonna have a strike. Don't be scabby, fellow John, that's I'm tell you right. He say, no, sir, may come out on strike. I'm a Johnny Mitchell man.
Well, we're hearing Me, Johnny Mitchell Man, a ballad from an album of anthracite mining songs that were recorded here in this region as the first post-war field expedition in 1946. The singers were all but one mine workers over 60 years old. This is Jerry Byrne at Buck Run.
Well, me belong for uni. I'm good citizen. 7, maybe 11 year. I'm working a big, big America. I'm working for the black.
The album notes give us some background. Me, Johnny Mitchell Man, is a product of the anthracite strike of 1902, which gave the Slavic mine workers the opportunity they'd been working for to vindicate themselves. Their existence had been extremely difficult owing to the general belief that they had been imported by coal operators to lower wages and degrade working conditions. The Slavs worried John Mitchell, the strike leader. When he first came to the region, Mitchell saw clearly that if he were to succeed in his mission to organize the industry, racial and national barriers must first be broken down. He made this one of his first objectives. All races, creeds, and classes he addressed with this gospel: the coal you dig is not Slavic coal, or Polish coal, or Irish coal. It is coal. At every opportunity, he urged the Welsh and Irish miners to be tolerant of their Slavic brothers. It took time and much persuasion to dissipate the mutual hatred and distrust. Gradually, however, he accomplished his purpose, and Slavs mingled with English-speaking fellow workers at mass meetings, picnics, and parades on terms of equality. The Slavs grew to almost worship Mitchell. When he finally issued the call to strike, there was no doubt in his mind as to where they stood. Me, Johnny Mitchell Man, in the Slavic American dialect, sung throughout the region, had reassured him. This ballad was written by Con Carbon of Wilkes-Barre, one of the most prolific of the anthracite bards and minstrels. That from George Corson, Minstrels of the Mine Patch. And those notes come from the album titled Songs and Ballads of the Anthracite Miners, issued by the Library of Congress Archive of Folk Culture. Today, October 29th, is marked as John Mitchell Day. In recognition of Mitchell's leadership and the strike's success, October 29th was proclaimed John Mitchell Day, the date miners returned to work in 1902. The day is still commemorated in parts of Pennsylvania, especially in the anthracite coal regions like Lackawanna, Luzerne, and Schuylkill counties, where Mitchell's legacy remains strong. That from the Pennsylvania Center for the Book. The Hope Horn Gallery at the University of Scranton is presenting an exhibition titled The Anthracite Coal Industry of Northeastern Pennsylvania, Selected Paintings, Sculptures, and Works on Paper from Public and Private Collections, 1829 through 1959, and the exhibition will run through December 12th. We had a visit from guest curator Richard Stanislaus, Chester Kaleza, retired site administrator of the Anthracite Heritage Museum and Scranton Iron Furnaces, and guest essayist for the exhibit catalog, and Dr. Darlene Miller-Lanning, director of the Hope Horn Gallery. In this, part two of our conversation, they speak about a work outside of the gallery.
Champion of labor, defender of human rights. My office in the gallery at the University of Scranton are a block away from the John Mitchell Monument downtown, and that thing is gorgeous. So from an art history standpoint, it's got a bronze figure in the round, full scale, maybe heroic, even larger than full scale. It's got a niche. It's got a carved relief representing miners behind that. And on the back, there's another carved relief of a miner's family. So the thing in and of itself, from a technical standpoint, is a real combination of materials and images and techniques that's just fabulous in and of itself. The sculptor was a man named Charles Keck. And the thing about it that is kind of striking to me, it's commemorating the strike of 1902, which was the big anthracite labor strike in Chester, and Richard could speak to that much more so than I could, but it's commemorated in 1924, so it's 20 years after the fact. So it's not the miners who participated in that strike who are commemorating it, it's their children. So it's the next generation, and there's this idea of honoring the generation who's gone before you and who has worked and who has fought for something that you now have, and expressing your respect for that. So it's the generation of boys like the young mule driver who are the ones who've grown up now and remembered what's happened. So Richard, you can talk about the miner and his family on the back, I think, in relation to that.
Well, it's outstanding. It's exposed to the elements, and it's held up rather well because we're looking at it being outside for 100 years. And I look at it now and then, and I am still amazed at the ability of the three Italian stone cutters, as well as the distinguished sculptor Keck, in carving it out, because they imposed in granite sensitive, very sensitive feelings, warm feelings, tender feelings in it. And they put symbolism in it at that time, because it might be hard to see, but there's a kerosene lamp in there, source of light for the humble miner's family. There's a Bible, too, on the shelf. There's a tobacco canister. I think there's a pipe there, too, on one of the shelves. And from each one, in kind of a tender expression, they give encouragement and hope within one another in the plight that they were involved in, that the father would be working in the anthracite coal colliery, as well as the oldest son. But one of the sons is in, I guess you'd call them, a student's outfit, one of the younger ones. And he was given the opportunity, perhaps, to go to school. But it's there for anyone to see in downtown Scranton. And I'd like to say this, with the dedication of that, with the making of it, with the financing of it, and with the love that was given to all that whole creation there, that was their high watermark for the anthracite miner. They finally reached a level, a point of recognition, and also being proud.
Oh, yes, because when I think about John Mitchell, you know, what a legacy for a monument to be dedicated to him as champion of labor and defender of human rights. And, you know, he was not from Scranton. He was born in Braidwood, Illinois, but he learned to love the area. In fact, he wanted to be buried in Scranton at Cathedral Cemetery. And so you can visit, you know, his gravesite today, just as you can visit the Mitchell Monument. He died in 1919, so it was 5 years later that this monument was dedicated, with funds both from anthracite coal miners and bituminous coal miners. So the whole United Mine Workers of America organization, and Richard mentioned President John L. Lewis, he came to the dedication.
The pose of John Mitchell is quite interesting.
It's very classical in a lot of ways. So there was an old tradition in classical sculpture of these life-size bronzes and figures that were orators, who were great speakers, who were great diplomats. And so it's based on that. And then the friezes behind him, there's a set of workers in a mine, and they represent really particular jobs in a mine. There's a fire boss. There are laborers who fill the cart. There's a young man who's leading the mules, so the mule driver. And then there are two miners with tools where they are removing coal from the coal face. So those very particular jobs are represented. And then on the back with the family, the mother and the father, the older generation, are seated at the table. One who is standing and silhouetted in the doorway, again, is that younger man, the oldest son. And his siblings, who are younger still, are the ones who are dressed to go to school. So the father's generation is done now. He is seated, and this young man has come into his own. They're the generation who are producing that monument. And again, the younger siblings are going to go on and do other things because of that education that they now have the opportunity to pursue. So you see the whole kind of legacy laid out in terms of that sculpture. Again, beautiful stuff related back to classical traditions.
Tell us, Darlene, about the run of this particular part and then what we look forward to next semester.
The exhibition itself runs through December 12th, and that is our first part, Anthracite Coal Industry of Northeastern Pennsylvania, Selected Paintings, Sculptures, and Works on Paper from Public and Private Collections, 1829 to 1959. In November, on First Friday, November 7th, we will have a second lecture, New Deal Post Office Murals in the Anthracite Regions of Northeastern Pennsylvania. And that is David Lembeck, who is a New Deal scholar in the Pern Auditorium for the lecture and then at the gallery for the reception with music by Tony Carney. And looking forward, Friday, February 6th, we will have our second show up and running, February 2nd through March 13th, Selected Prints, Drawings, and Watercolors from the Stanislaus Collection, 1933 to 1946. And we'll have a panel discussion with Richard Stanislaus, who's our guest curator, Chester Kalesa, historian and also guest essayist for both of our catalogs, and Peter Hoffer, who is an artist and printmaker and professor emeritus from Marywood University. So it's a nice schedule of events, and we've tried to think about it in a lot of ways. So there's sort of the art and the history side, and then there's also kind of the technical side and the collecting side with the second show. So the reason we have two shows is because initially we talked about one show, but Richard had so many WPA prints that we couldn't fit them all. So that was show number two. We had to separate them out because we couldn't bear to not show them. Gallery hours are Sunday through Friday from 12 until 4, and Wednesday evenings from 6 until 8. And we were fortunate, we're supported in our project by grants from the Gale and Francis Slattery Center for the Ignatian Humanities at the University of Scranton, the Armature Initiative of the Northeast Educational Intermediate Unit Number 19, and the Lackawanna County Office of Arts and Culture. So we've had a lot of really great collaboration.
Oh, you know, Joe Silovatsky, that man is my brother. Last night he's come to my shandy. John,
Dr. Darlene Miller-Lanning, director of the Hope Horn Gallery, with guest curator Richard Stanislaus and Chester Kalesa, retired site administrator of the Anthracite Heritage Museum and Scranton Iron Furnaces, talking with us in part two of a conversation about an exhibition titled The Anthracite Coal Industry of Northeastern Pennsylvania, Selected Paintings, Sculptures, and Works on Paper from Public and Private Collections, 1829 through 1959, and the show runs through December 12th. We heard Dr. Miller-Lanning talk about the next event in the series, Friday, November 7th. It's guest lecturer David Lembeck, who's a New Deal scholar. He'll speak on New Deal post office murals in the Anthracite regions of northeastern Pennsylvania. And that's in Brennan Hall at 5 o'clock on November 7th. And there will be a reception to follow at the Hope Horn Gallery running from 6 to 8. For more information on the web, scranton.edu, scranton.edu, the Hope Horn Gallery at the University of Scranton, presenting The Anthracite Coal Industry of Northeastern Pennsylvania, Selected Paintings, Sculptures, and Works on Paper from Public and Private Collections, 1829 through 1959. This is running through December 12th, scranton.edu. And as we noted at the start, today, October 29th, is Johnny Mitchell Day.